Almost every application or system involves some sort of user onboarding. Increasingly, companies must implement Know Your Customer and Know Your Business Compliance, or KYC and KYB, as part of that process. In addition, they often handle Personal Identifiable Information, or PII. Footprint is a developer platform that was co-founded by Alex Grinman for handling identity, security, fraud, and authentication. Alex joins the show to talk about identity verification, security, compliance, Footprint's front-end and back-end design, and much more. Gregor Vand is a security-focused technologist and is the founder and CTO of MailPass. Previously, Gregor was a CTO across cybersecurity, cyber insurance, and general software engineering companies. He has been based in Asia-Pacific for almost a decade and can be found via his profile at vand.hk.
Hi, Alex. Welcome to Software Engineering Daily.
Hey, Gregor. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Alex, it's great to have you here. You've been in the authentication and identity space for kind of a little while now, and you're the co-founder and CTO now of Footprint. What was your road to becoming the co-founder and CTO of Footprint?
You know, I started programming when I was a kid, started building software, actually really started building iPhone apps in high school. It's kind of where I really started. And I've always been interested in identity and security. I mean, the idea of, you know, how do you prove something to somebody without, you know, giving away all of your information was intriguing to me. I think my real kind of intro into cryptography was I took this very theoretical cryptography course at MIT and taught by the inventors of zero knowledge proofs, just fell in love with, you know, how a little bit of simple math and a little bit of programming can create these pretty amazing guarantees. Started a company right out of school in the authentication space, kind of merged my ideas of building iPhone apps with security and identity. So I thought it was pretty cool that the iPhone launched with a secure enclave chip on device, initially built for storing things like credit cards or other passwords. But really, you could use it to store any kind of key material. And so I thought, hey, it'd be pretty cool if like we stored a public-private key pair on one of these chips. And then, you know, the private key never left your phone, kind of like a YubiKey, but in a much more useful form factor that everyone already has. Maybe we can use that to encrypt, you know, messages between people or use it to authenticate, you know, using an SSH key. And so I ended up starting a company in that space, which, you know, led me to like things like FIDO2, U2F, passkeys, and, you know, built that first company. We sold that company to Akamai, and the startup bug kind of bit me pretty early on, and here I am.
Yeah, awesome. So yeah, I mean, Footprint, as we'll hear, kind of very much builds on kind of all of that. So maybe at like a high level, like what does Footprint do?
So at Footprint, we're helping companies automate onboarding. And so onboarding is this kind of like opaque thing. What is onboarding? You know, every product you use has an onboarding form. You know, the simplest products maybe just ask you for your name and email address. Almost every onboarding form has you set up a credential, a way to authenticate yourself. So when you come back later, you know, your account is for you and no one else can access it. But there's this other range of onboarding that actually many products that we use have. Think of your investing app, your credit card that you sign up for, a bank account, maybe even when you're, you know, renting a car or, you know, booking a house to rent, right? These products, these marketplaces, they need to know who you are, maybe a little bit more than most other applications. They collect a lot of other personal information like your full name, your address, your date of birth. Sometimes they ask you for your, you know, social security number if you're in the States, or a scan of your driver's license or your passport. And what they do with this information is they verify all of it, right? They try to verify as much of it as possible to make sure that the person signing up really is who they say they are. And also that they're not a criminal or a bad person or have a history of, you know, defrauding people or things like that. And that's a really complex process that many companies have to solve. And they have to solve it on multiple different layers, everything from storing that data to securely to verifying it correctly. And so what Footprint does is we give companies a couple lines of code and we basically take care of all of that, everything from collecting information, verifying it, storing it securely, providing an audit trail. If you're a regulated industry, you know, sending that audit trail to third parties so that you can be in compliance. We handle all of that and basically make it so that companies don't have to rebuild this onboarding flow from scratch. And then for consumers, what we're doing is once you onboard once to any company or product that uses Footprint, every future time will just be one click. So it lowers friction, makes it easier to use products in a trusted and verified way. which more and more products on the internet today are requiring just because of the nature of the really sensitive things that you can do online.
Yeah. So I guess just to kind of read that back, Footprint is taking both sides of the coin here, which is that both the user has to go through a process that is a Footprint process to sign on. At the same time, the platform has to be also in some way communicating with Footprint or using Footprint, like behind the scenes. Like, how is it API driven, or is it sort of something that you integrate into the platform, or how does it work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a lot of KYC identity companies, onboarding companies, they're typically just like a backend API. They, you know, you send them some data, they tell you if it's, you know, verified or some, you know, additional scores or something. And we at Footprint believe that you have to really verify who the user is, you have to be all the way at the edge, right? You have to actually interact with that end user directly. So companies, really the integration touches two points. They embed some code in their front end, and then they embed some code in their back end as well. And our front end takes care of securely collecting all that information, verifying it, doing things like dynamic step-ups, right? If we determine there's some high fraud potential risk signals, we can step up the user and ask for some more information, all without any code or any complexity that customers have to implement. And on the back end, you know, once the front end finishes, they go ahead and they verify that exchange, sort of that transaction for what we call a Footprint ID or an FPID, a single sort of token that they can then store on their side that really encapsulates all the identity, the risk information, and the overall decisioning that happened, you know, whether or not that user is who they say they are. So the integration kind of touches both sides, but the end user really interacts directly with Footprint through kind of this embedded onboarding experience. And then that user actually gets credentialed as well. So they set up a passkey. I'm sure we'll get into like the details all there, but really, so we interact with both the end consumer and the business.
Yeah. So I don't know if you like this analogy or not, but is it kind of the Stripe for identity management? Is that a good analogy, or is it different? Because I mean, all the things you've kind of just mentioned there, where you're interacting with the Footprint platform as a, you know, a token is passed back, and that's kind of what's representing the user. Sounds like Stripe.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting. Like, a lot of people think of Stripe as this payments platform, right? That does orchestrates payments and billing. But at the very kind of initial product that Stripe launched was that they said, okay, storing a credit card number and then, you know, charging it is very complex. So we will essentially tokenize the credit card and give you back like a Stripe customer ID or, you know, payment object, whatever it is. And then we take care of, you know, charging that payment object. And so that's effectively what Footprint does as well, except instead of just being a credit card, which is actually a pretty complex object in its own right, but the identity is much more complicated, right? You have everything from, you know, the basic sort of PII attributes like name, date of birth, SSN, you know, but then you also have things like identity documents, and those all have information that can be extracted and verified. You have information about, you know, someone's driving history that is derived from their identity, right? So there's all sorts of identity information that we basically tokenize all into one, you know, simple string that customers store and solve that complexity for them.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So there's kind of almost like three kind of facets to this. And also, you know, when I look at the Footprint website, you know, in the same way. So we've got security, we've got vaulting, and we've got compliance. Could you maybe sort of speak to, I mean, security is obviously a big term generally. So there's obviously security is in the context of Footprint, which might be interesting to sort of hear about. Then there's vaulting, and that can be highly complex. And I'm sure there's just a ton of complex stuff in there that'd be great to hear about. And then there's the compliance piece, which I'm really curious about. Yeah, because that feels like this whole problem I wouldn't ever want to go and touch, but you guys are doing that, which is very cool. So yeah, so let's maybe hear about more of the sort of technical side of these three areas.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would, in kind of in security, I would maybe bundle like risk and identity. And, you know, that pillar is, you know, very crucial to Footprint and our customers, especially, you know, the companies that are really heavily regulated, right? They need to make sure that they are actually verifying that person's identity. And so this involves, you know, a bunch of things like complex integrations with the LexisNexis of the world, Experian, different credit bureaus, data sources. And that actually is a fairly commoditized industry today. You know, there's a lot of companies that do just this. At the very end, they actually boil down to maybe like five or six different bureaus like LexisNexis, you know, Experian, which we connect to directly. And this, even though I say it's commoditized, it's actually fairly complex. Like, most companies should not be integrating directly with Experian and LexisNexis, right? They have some shared databases, data sources, some disjoint. But really what it boils down to is, you know, taking these like fairly legacy APIs. Sometimes it's like a 400-page PDF of all the possible like risk codes you can get, and boiling that down to, you know, hey, does the information entered match each other, right? So triangulating identity. So think of like, does the name match the date of birth, match the address, right? Is this a recent address or maybe it's an older address? So kind of boiling all of that down into deciding whether or not the data is actually accurate, right? So that's sort of maybe step number one is, does the data entered actually, is it correct? And correct, by the way, is not a binary decision, right? As you can imagine. And users sometimes mistype things. And by the way, this is like a core part of why Footprint's front end helps here, because we catch a lot of the errors on the front end that a lot of other KYC companies that are just back-end APIs cannot do. For instance, if the user actually accidentally like fat-fingered, you know, their date of birth and they're off by 100 years, like our front end will catch that. It won't let you enter in a bad date of birth. And similarly, if you're entering in a PO box or the address of a prison or something like that, our front end will double check that that is correct for you, right? And tell you, hey, PO boxes are not allowed, right? And so we improve the accuracy of the overall sort of identity risk matching. And so that's sort of the kind of the baseline. The next layer on top of that is we have a fairly sophisticated decisioning and rules engine that's built. And the reason is, you know, different businesses, different industries have different rules. Like if you're a bank, the, you know, compliance policy that you need to follow is very different than if you're, you know, let's say renting apartments to people. And so we give companies, you know, based on industry, you're in a default good set of rules, but every business can customize them. And this is really powerful because once again, our front end is integrated, you can create a rule that actually does a dynamic step up, which actually changes the front end, right, dynamically. And so the nice thing is that you can go from just basic sort of what's called EKYC or just non-documentary information to then stepping up and doing a document verification, collecting a selfie, matching the selfie to the document. And the nice thing about kind of the front end integration is that, and this gets into vaulting as well, is that all of this data is collected directly kind of in the same way that Stripe provides an iframe to collect a credit card number. Footprint's kind of iframe securely collects all this information and vaults it directly in the Footprint vaulting infrastructure. We'll get into kind of how that all works. But that means that this data doesn't pass through your servers, your code. It essentially makes you out of scope for a lot of the security and compliance regimes with touching this very sensitive data. So Footprint kind of handles all of that as well. And that is sort of, I would say, the first line of the product. Vaulting really is the foundation for everything. I mean, all the data that we touch is vaulted. Our technology, we're built on top of what's called AWS Nitro Enclaves. It's a fairly recent technology from AWS. There's a couple of competing technologies on Azure and Google. If you're kind of in the security space, you're probably thinking like Intel SGX, right? That's like that's probably the go-to example, the most famous. Amazon has a couple of really cool advantages over Intel SGX. And a lot of it is really around like developer experience and the fact that the isolation guarantees are really nice. And so just kind of a quick primer on, you know, what Nitro Enclaves are and what guarantees they provide. Essentially, it lets you take some code and run it inside of an environment that is network gapped, memory gapped, you know, CPU isolated, and attested itself. And so this is running on special hardware where you can get a cryptographic attestation that it's running on untampered, you know, AWS Nitro Enclave hardware that you've signed, right? So the idea is that no one else can kind of deploy additional malicious code. And, you know, even if you have like a malicious dependency that you've accidentally introduced, well, because it's network gapped, you know, that can't escape, right? And so what we've done at Footprint is we've designed our entire vaulting infrastructure around Nitro Enclaves. And at a very simple level, we have what's called a user vault. So every single user in the Footprint system has their own, what we call a vault. And that really is just a public-private key pair. As soon as data enters Footprint, it's encrypted with the public key, and the corresponding private key that can be used to decrypt that data is only accessible within these Nitro Enclave environments. And so whenever you need to process data, compute on it, you actually have to send not only the encrypted data, the end-to-end encrypted data, to the Enclave, but also send this encrypted private key that can only be decrypted by the Enclave itself. And so this lets us, in a very small footprint that is, you know, isolated by the kind of Nitro Enclave isolation guarantees, sign with our signed code, do computations on that data. So at a very simple example, if you need to compute somebody's age, right, you don't need to send their date of birth and then, you know, do that computation inside of a bunch of application code that, you know, might accidentally exfiltrate that data. You can actually send the encrypted date of birth, decrypt it, compute, you know, the age from that, send the age back out. And so we essentially can kind of guarantee that data, the minimum amount of information that is needed is what leaves the enclave. Furthermore, the enclave can do decrypt and then re-encrypt. So if you need to send data to a third party, you can decrypt it and then re-encrypt it to a new public key that, you know, only the third party has access to the corresponding private key. And so this way you can ensure that as data moves from the enclave through untrusted, you know, unisolated sources, it is still end-to-end encrypted to its destination. And so this really powerful building block lets us provide things like vault proxy functions. So lets our customers send data to third parties securely without ever having to see that data or touch that data and ensure that it's end-to-end encrypted to the actual destination. And that's really important because, you know, companies that touch, you know, that do onboarding, that touch this really sensitive data, they often, you know, what they really end up doing is sending that data somewhere else anyways. They have banking partners, they have compliance auditors, third-party auditors that look at all this information. And so making it really easy to move data securely that doesn't really put you in scope for a lot of the security compliance regimes is pretty important. And so I've said the word compliance many times. Compliance kind of is boiled through everything in footprint and also really in what our customers need. And this is everything from data security compliance, you know, making sure that if you're holding on to credit card numbers or SSNs, you're compatible with the associated privacy framework or, you know, PCI framework that you need to in order to run your business. But it's also touches the identity and risk kind of compliance part of it. So our customers have what's called, typically we call them CIPs, or they, you know, it's an industry phrase, which is customer identification policy. It is essentially a set of rules that says, these are the things that we've checked before we've opened a new account for a user. And banks, for instance, have very, you know, intense CIP policies. Brokerages have pretty intense CIP policies. You know, certain, like if you're renting apartment rental, they might have to create their own that is not based in like financial regulations, right? And so what Footprint lets you do is we have this concept called playbooks, which not only define the information you collect, but also, as mentioned, the rules and decisioning logic that you use to actually decide whether you want to approve a user or reject a user, or maybe reject the user but put them in a manual review queue because they might be over, you know, that decision might be overridden by one of your customer support folks. So the idea is that these playbooks let you essentially map the banks or your third party, you know, auditor, whoever's deciding, maybe it's just you, what your CIP policy is. You map that to a playbook, and Footprint not only takes care of collecting all that information, but also putting that user in the right stack of approved, rejected, or manual review to make sure that you're compliant. And some new product, and I'll stop talking in a second, but it's a new product that we're launching pretty soon is a compliance product, you know, similar to like the Vantas and Dratas of the world, but really focused to onboarding, which lets you show evidence that you're following that CIP policy. So you can basically give access to a third-party auditor, and without them having to see any sensitive data, they can actually audit your manual review process. They can audit your how things are being approved and verify that, hey, the bank's CIP policy is actually being met, you know, by sampling a bunch of different onboarding cases and providing that on a real-time basis. Basically, you know, alleviating the company from doing all of this manual work, you know, proving that they're in compliance, which they have to do basically on a quarterly basis, sometimes more often even.
Yeah, very fascinating. So yeah, just to touch on that last bit there to start with, the new product, was that kind of a clear ask from existing customers, or is it just a sort of natural evolution of where this technology can go, or a combo, or yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination. I think what we've seen is that there's two things that we've seen in the kind of the market that let us build this. The first is that data security and security in general used to not really be part of the conversation with financial compliance. But it really is now. Banks not only want to see that you're identifying customers properly, but that you're also storing that data properly. And that's because of all the breaches and leaks that have been happening. You know, as you can imagine, the more data that's leaked, the harder it is to actually prove that the person that's onboarding is who they say they are. And so these things are really married at the hip. And that's why we believe at Footprint that it makes sense to not only prove that a customer is storing that data securely, identifying that, you know, that person correctly, but also they're storing that data properly as well. And that's why the vaulting technology is so core to what we do. The second piece that has been pretty interesting and mostly in effect of the market is there's been a lot more scrutiny. You can see all the, you know, banks that have kind of gone under, that have kicked off fintechs from their platform, the, you know, banking as a service providers that have struggled kind of losing partner banks. We've seen a lot of our customers have to switch partner banks, for instance, in order to keep their business running. And so it's been pretty obvious that if you switch to a different banking provider, now you have to go through a completely new, you know, audit process, Footprint can really make that really simple, and it makes it easy even to be onboarded to multiple banking partners as well without having to change and, you know, do a bunch of manual work to prove that you're in compliance.
Yeah, because just to kind of, again, maybe read back, once on the user side, the user has used Footprint once through some platform. If another platform is also using Footprint, does that become a kind of a breeze for that user to move through? Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, and this works actually both from the end user and consumer kind of point of view, but also from the Footprint customer, the business onboarding onto multiple partner banks, right? So from the end consumer point of view, if you're onboarding to multiple products that use Footprint, you don't have to, you confirm your information, right? Because we authenticate you and we basically can autofill a lot of your information. We skip past that, but we also get a lot of feedback and labels from how you are as a user across different platforms. So if you do fraudulent activity in one place, you know, you shouldn't just be able to create a new account and redo that same fraudulent activity somewhere else. And there's basically infinite number of bad actors, right? Because a single sort of fraudster or bad actor can create a bunch of different synthetic identities or steal a bunch of real people's identities and onboard a bunch of different accounts. But good actors are much, you know, more valuable to spot. So the way to think about it is, if you're a good actor across a number of platforms, you should have a much easier time onboarding somewhere else and basically jumping through less hoops because you've proven yourself to be a good actor. And Footprint can do that in a way that's both secure and also compliant, because we can also prove that in a lot of our reporting.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your skills as a software developer, open source, the impact of AI? How about your businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're delivering daily digests or serving sensational scoops, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for the $1 a month trial at shopify.com/sedaily, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/sedaily now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/sedaily.
I'm going to come back to the technology in a second because I've jumped away, but this is just really interesting. So is that almost like a user can have almost, I know this is a slightly loaded term, so I appreciate it, but like a credit score almost like with Footprint. So like, that now suddenly we're able to see the stats on someone across multiple platforms, multiple companies, and understand this user has a pretty good history of being a reputable user, I guess.
I would say it's not so much around, we're not trying to build like a credit score across, you know, like a social credit score or anything like that. It's much more around if you're doing obviously bad activity, right? So for instance, if you're on board to one platform, and you've created this identity and you've associated it essentially with your devices, and then you go ahead and you onboard onto another platform using the same device, but now you're using a different identity or using different information, we can actually detect that you're using the same devices that were previously associated with a different identity and Footprint. So that's one kind of way we can catch bad actors, which, you know, the typical sort of fraudster, we call it duplicate fraud, right? Is I go on Telegram and I go into some group and I purchase like a packet of 50 stolen identities. And that might even include driver's licenses, by the way, right? And then I go into like Robinhood and I go into a couple of different apps. Maybe there's some sign up perks, like get, you know, invest in your first stock for free or something. And I go and I create a bunch of accounts and then I do a bunch of bad activity with those accounts and then essentially just abandon them later. It's something that's really hard to stop. There's a lot of different tools that companies have to string together in order to even try to stop them. And then there's always that risk that they're, you know, preventing a good person from just using their product, which is a horrible experience. And so what Footprint does is, because we have this kind of concept of like shared identity and we credential the user, we can, and we actually associate that through various kind of device intelligence that we collect as well, using app clips and InSnaps. You know, we can get into kind of the tech specs of how we're building that. But the idea is that we can essentially detect duplicate fraud happening in real time. And we can determine that the same sort of person, you know, because we're at the front end, because we're all the way at the edge of where the user actually participates in that onboarding flow, we can detect that the same person is onboarding multiple different identities and essentially block them really quickly, right? And provide those risk signals to our customers that this might be a duplicate fraud attack. And that actually helps prevent a lot of bad acting. The other sort of spectrum, and this is something that, you know, we're still developing, is around fraud labels. So you can tell us, hey, we've offboarded this user for fraud. And the reason this is a tricky problem in general is sometimes people commit fraud with their real identities, right? And fraud on one platform might not mean you'd want to not allow that user onto a different platform, right? Like if I rent a car and then, you know, don't return it or something, I mean, that's pretty bad, right? And that, so the actual translation of like how you commit fraud on different platforms, for us, what we're trying to do is really solve like the onboarding fraud. We want to determine that the information that somebody's providing really is their information. So if we can detect that, you know, you're using data from somebody else across the same device, those are the kinds of fraudulent actions that we want to stop in real time. And they're pretty hard to stop with today's tools.
Yeah, got it.
This episode of Software Engineering Daily is brought to you by Vantage. Do you know what your cloud bill will be for this month? For many companies, cloud costs are the number two line item in their budget and the number one fastest growing category of spend. Vantage helps you get a handle on your cloud bills with self-serve reports and dashboards built for engineers, finance, and operations teams. With Vantage, you can put costs in the hands of the service owners and managers who generate them, giving them budgets, alerts, anomaly detection, and granular visibility into every dollar. With native billing integrations with dozens of cloud services, including AWS, Azure, GCP, Datadog, Snowflake, and Kubernetes, Vantage is the one FinOps platform to monitor and reduce all your cloud bills. To get started, head to vantage.sh, connect your accounts, and get a free savings estimate as part of a 14-day free trial.
Okay, so back to just the technology side. The vaulting, you know, such a core piece to the whole footprint platform. It sounds like from your past experience, et cetera, you were pretty familiar with even just the idea of the concept of enclaves. But, you know, I imagine finding other engineers with this knowledge, like how easy is that? And how easy has it been to kind of get onboard other engineers into what sounds like a fairly esoteric system, or having to think quite a different way about how to build a platform?
So it's interesting. I think one of the toughest problems with working in security and cryptography in general is this concept of threat models. You know, a lot of people operate with different threat models in their mind, you know, and what is a threat model? A threat model is basically what powers an adversary has, right? It's a set of assumptions you make that, you know, if an adversary could break, let's say, Amazon's root of, you know, Nitro Enclave root of trust, if they could manufacture those signatures, forge those signatures, well, that would defeat the Nitro Enclave guarantees, right? Or at least some part of them. So, you know, we assume in our threat model that, you know, the adversary doesn't have the ability to forge, let's say, global kind of, you know, CAs like the Amazon's, you know, root CA for Nitro Enclave Trust. But the real threat model, you know, that I think affects a lot of businesses today that is very reasonable that I think a lot of businesses don't actually consider is this idea of, okay, database encryption, data encryption, right? So the today kind of standard is you store some data in your database and then you turn on, you know, encryption at rest, which is essentially a switch on whatever database provider you're using that says, okay, when the hard disk starts up and loads into memory, it will decrypt this data, usually with a symmetric key. And so what that really means is that if somebody runs into the data center, sticks their hand, you know, in the cage, rips out a hard drive, hopefully that hard drive will be end-to-end encrypted with a key that is not anywhere to be found. And so this protects that data in those kinds of cases. The reality is that these data centers are actually fairly well protected. I mean, it's really unlikely. They have cameras everywhere. They have locks on cages. So while this protection is great and important, and we should still do it, by the way, we do use this protection as well, even though it's redundant in some cases, it doesn't really solve the much more realistic problem, which is how many different services are talking to your database. In a modern kind of cloud-based company, yes, you have your applications, your microservices that are all, you know, have access to connect to the database. But you might also have third-party tools like Retool or business intelligence dashboards, and they all essentially have access to this data. And so it becomes really difficult for businesses to limit, you know, okay, no one should be able to see the social security number or the credit card number. And so that's why kind of in general vaulting is important. And so the threat model that Footprint operates under is that if we made our database read-only on the internet, publicly available to everybody, you should not be able to learn about people's private information, their SSN, their documents. And so that's sort of the core threat model that we operate under. And so I would say, to go back to the original question, I think the first kind of hurdle when you're bringing on folks into working in security and enclaves and in the entire kind of area in general is just to be really clear about what threat model you're fighting. And the main threat model that we're trying to fight with enclaves is the application surface area, right? Like the 99% of the code or 95% of the code that everyone on the team is constantly writing to is sort of out of scope for being able to really abuse this very sensitive data. And a malicious kind of dependency there or some bad code that was committed, right? We do the maximal amount of, you know, protection to separate that from leaking any kind of sensitive PII data, card data, things like that. The good news about Nitro Enclaves is that the actual service area is really small. Like I would say like our Nitro Enclave related code is 6,000 to 8,000 lines of code, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things is pretty small. So the number of engineers that actually have to write Enclave code is fairly small. The really nice thing is that when you hire a third party, you know, pen testing auditing firm, it's a small service area for them to go through as well. And so the nice thing is that it's not so much about arming a team of 100 engineers to go and work on this one part of the code. It's just having a small team that really understands the threat model, really understands the security guarantees that you're trying to build. And then, of course, going deep into the fundamentals, like actually understanding, like, you know, the elliptic curve, you know, algorithm that you're using and like making sure that everything is up to spec and correct.
As a listener of Software Engineering Daily, you understand the impact of generative AI. On the podcast, we've covered many exciting aspects of Gen AI technologies, as well as the new vulnerabilities and risks they bring. HackerOne's AI Red Teaming addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses launching new AI deployments. Their approach involves stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. Within the HackerOne community, over 750 active hackers specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and safety testing. In a single recent engagement, a team of 18 HackerOne hackers quickly identified 26 valid findings within the initial 24 hours and accumulated over 100 valid findings in the two-week engagement. HackerOne offers strategic flexibility, rapid deployment, and a hybrid talent strategy. Learn more at hackerone.com/AI. That's HackerOne.com/AI.
And I'm not sure completely understand if you're not familiar with this, but like MongoDB, you know, they released queryable encryption. That feels like they're almost trying to kind of get into this space, but maybe from a different angle where it's not as much, because the AWS Enclave sounds, it's quite a hardware heavy hurdle to get over for someone else to kind of come into that space. But yeah, I don't know if you are familiar, any kind of comparisons you could or differences you could make there.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the fundamentals of it. I read a little bit about it. I think the major questions I would have, you know, if I were to go dig into this and compare it, is how those keys are managed, how it actually does the encryption. Basically, there's two important things to consider. When you're writing data, what does that process look like? Like, how are you encrypting it in a way that it can be, you know, queryably decrypted later? And then, of course, like how those underlying keys are stored. Because one of the nice things about Nitro Enclaves is that you get these hardware security guarantees of isolation that says that this key, you know, this master private key for that user vault cannot be decrypted outside of, you know, Footprint signed Enclave code running on legitimate Enclave hardware. And potentially, you know, you could even write maybe an adapter in MongoDB that talks to a Nitro Enclave in real time or something. You might be able to do that. as well. There's a really good, and this is a pretty old paper, it came out of MIT and I read it when I was there, called CryptDB, which actually tries to do a lot of these, you know, fully homomorphic encryption. If you're going really far into like the theory field, and there are companies that are actually trying to build this in practice, it's pretty slow. Like this is sort of the generalizable way of computing on encrypted data. And there's sort of two interesting things about that. The first is that it's pretty slow, but there's a lot of research happening to optimize it. And the CryptDB paper is sort of a way of saying, okay, let's take a bunch of different partially homomorphic cryptographic algorithms and encrypt data in some special way so that we can still do a bunch of queries without fully decrypting all of that data. I think the problem in general, there's two problems, is one, it's fairly complicated for most developers to interact directly with these systems because it requires a deeper level of understanding about things like homomorphic functions, like how to actually encrypt data in a way that you can query what you want later. And most companies, as they're building products, they actually don't necessarily know all the queries that they're going to want to run eventually. And so kind of Footprint took the more opinionated approach of you rarely will ever need to query SSNs. And we know what PII data looks like. We know what identity data looks like. So we can fingerprint things and make things searchable in a way that you're using us as your identity source, secure identity source. So we already know all the kinds of queries you're going to want to run on searching for identity information. And we're going to make that secure versus a more generic approach, which then kind of punts that decision and architecture to the developers. And the second thing, which is also pretty important, is how are the keys managed, right? And so this is something that Footprint solves with Metro Enclaves. But at the end of the day, cryptography doesn't really solve any problems. It just kind of boils it down to the length of the key. And those keys are pretty short, but you still have to store them somewhere. So even in the world of fully homomorphic encryption, even if we had it, even if it was efficient, you still need a secure place to do those computations. And so, you know, fully homomorphic encryption becomes super performant tomorrow. I think our Nitro enclaves are the best place to do them. And we would essentially be able to roll out a bunch of new abilities for doing more computations efficiently in a way that secures the key outside of the rest of the application surface area.
Yeah, there's a very good point to make just about working with encrypted data, which is, yeah, the speed factor. And I think it's a great point to make about it is okay, actually, in cases such as this, to have opinions about the kind of data that is going to need to be worked with often and then the kind that isn't. And developers should maybe kind of try and think a little bit more ahead on these ones where they can. And I say this more from the, I guess, the perspective of developers should start getting really used to having to work with encrypted data, because to this point in time, probably I'm just going to hazard a guess that like at least 50% out there listening have not ever, like their databases that they work with are just full of, they can see all the data and they know exactly what's going on, or they can see it. But, you know, fast forward 2 years, I hope, it's only as long as 2 years, that, you know, most databases, if you're a developer, you look at it, you have no idea what's going on. And you're maybe working with some sort of fake test data, which we've got a couple of episodes coming up on, or maybe have already been aired. But generally speaking, so the age of this database that everyone can kind of just see and work with really fast, no, it's going to have to change. And it sounds like Nitro Enclaves are kind of the absolute, you know, hardened version of that, which is obviously needed for such a platform that is a vaulting platform. But there are, you know, there are other step measures that developers can take that maybe isn't quite as far as Nitro Enclaves, but it's good to be aware of all the different approaches. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen already that a lot of like our customers and companies we talk to, you know, they don't even want to store SSNs. Like you wouldn't believe the amount of architecture hoops that people jump through so that they don't need to store things like SSNs, right? And because they don't have to worry about encrypting them, you know, be audited for it later. So like they sometimes require users to retype their SSN multiple times in order to then, you know, send it kind of in memory without actually ever storing it down. And I, you know, I actually applaud those approaches. I mean, it means they're kind of thinking about it the right way. And, you know, we're just trying to make that developer experience much easier. And tons of businesses actually do need to store this data for audit purposes. And so that we need to solve it for them.
Absolutely. So moving forwards to how Footprint is a platform that a consumer or user is going to be aware of and interact with, as well as the provider, the one that needs all this technology so that they can verify. It's a kind of a double-sided problem. Or at least that's how I kind of looked at it, that you kind of have to get both sides in agreement that they're going to use this thing. I guess the user consumer maybe has way less choice. You know, if they're coming onto a platform that uses Footprint, well, that's what they need to use. But yeah, how are you kind of approaching this sort of, are there other services using Footprint, and sort of, are there any, what kind of hurdles are you facing there, if any?
Yeah. So I think you said it right, which is, you know, users, they don't really care. I think we'd like to think that most people love to perfectly architect their entire world of privacy and security, but most don't understand it and they shouldn't really understand it. I've always been a believer that security without user experience is pointless, right? It's not easy to use. No one's going to use it. So it doesn't matter how secure it is. And so part of the kind of overall ethos of Footprint is actually be very design and consumer focused, even though we're selling to enterprises, to businesses, right? And part of that is because the end user interacts with kind of these embedded onboarding modules that we built. And so from the user's point of view, they think that, you know, the first time they're onboarding onto Footprint, you know, via a product, they're not really thinking about Footprint. They're not really seeing it. We do a couple of things to help the user understand if they're curious, because even though a lot of users might not care so much about their privacy and security, anytime you ask them for very sensitive information, they always pause, right? And that's the worst thing. You know, you're trying to convert a user to buy some stock in your investing app, and they don't want to give you the core information you need to open an account for them. That's tough, right? And that, the drop-off rate is huge. So one of the, our missions actually is to lower the friction, make it easier for people to use trusted applications on the internet. And so to do that, we actually automatically generate like certain privacy pages. We explain to users how their data is stored and secured. And it's kind of akin to like the very old days of like your credit card, you know, the badges on websites of like your credit card information stored securely, but I think kind of on steroids, and where we actually explain it to users much better. So from the user's perspective, they're sort of the customers, the businesses, the products that they're onboarding to have already made the decision to use Footprint. And so they kind of go along with the flow. The one crucial step that we do to that onboarding is we have the user set up their passkey, we verify their phone number. So we do a couple of credentialing steps. So when the user comes back, it kind of is a magical experience where they do a face ID or they do a touch ID. You know, they basically use their passkey, which from the user's perspective is just a biometric. But as we understand it, the biometric is really a safeguard to the cryptographic key that's stored on that device or synced across all their devices. And so from the user's perspective, they do this very secure operation and all their data is autofilled, right? And so that actually is a much better feeling than if, for instance, you know, some competing technologies like you, I think you enter the last four of your SSN and then verify an OTP and then it fills in your information. That to users, I think, feels a little bit more sketchy of like, how do you get all my information? Maybe I'll drop off, maybe I'll convert. You know, it's a little bit less clear, but also less secure because SIM swaps, as we know, happen all the time. You know, man-in-the-middle phishing happens all the time with OTP codes. So passkeys really let us, that we, when the user onboards the first time, we create that passkey for them. That lets us not only secure that account, but also kind of slowly start onboarding them into this idea of Footprint and this portable identity across the internet. For businesses, kind of on the other side, you know, they also don't actually necessarily care about the portable identity, especially when we were just starting out and we had zero portable identities, right? Why would they care, right? It's kind of a chicken or the egg network bootstrapping problem. And so we actually knew that, you know, that was part of our design from day zero. We knew that companies would not care about that. And so the reality is we actually set out to build the best onboarding platform, regardless of the portable identity, right? Even if portable identity never existed, companies should still choose Footprint because it simplifies developer experience. It's much more accurate. It has security baked in and solves all these kind of compliance regulatory problems as well. And so that's sort of how we convince businesses to use Footprint, is just giving them a much more superior product. And then eventually the portable identities start rolling in, and then it actually creates an even higher value prop, because not only can you securely onboard your users, you can also onboard them with less friction, and means higher conversion rate, better user experience. And so for businesses, things like the passkeys, the credentialing, actually end up playing a pretty positive role too. And that was something that wasn't necessarily obvious to us when we first set out to build Footprint. And this is, you know, part of the security pillar as well, which is, you know, every platform, and we talked about early on, like they need to have the user log back in. And it turns out that account takeover has detrimental effect, of course, to the end user, but also on the business, who sometimes is responsible for remediating the effects of that account takeover. Take, for example, you know, a gambling app, right? Gambling regulations are really strict. You know, if you break them, you could lose your gambling license, can totally shut the business down. Imagine a case where, you know, a parent creates an account, they're doing everything legally, they KYC themselves, you know, kid picks up their phone, does the OTP challenge because they picked up the phone, right? And then logs back in. And now places a bet. Now that you have like an underage person doing gambling, the parent complains that they lost a bunch of money, it wasn't them. It's this sort of gray area situation. Things that, you know, strong authentication that proves that the person who verified their identity initially is the same person unlocking that device, all of a sudden becomes very important. And, you know, that's true not only for this is kind of a more of like a friendly fraud scenario where like, you know, someone you know takes your phone, maybe they don't even know any better. But this is true as well if somebody breaks into your account who, you know, somebody like an actual fraudster, hacker, or whoever it might be. So really having that strong identity and authentication tied to the identity that created that account becomes really important. Things for account recovery. If you lose access to your devices, how do you prove who you are again? Footprint can do that. We know how to verify someone's identity. We have a bunch of authentication mechanisms that are beyond just, you know, a username and password, which you might forget or lose access to. So these kind of properties that make portal identity possible also have become pretty valuable to, you know, companies that aren't even thinking about the portable identity aspect, but just some kind of the core onboarding things that they have to solve.
Yeah, I really like how you guys have thought about this, which is, yeah, the portable identity. Yeah, that would be great once, you know, hundreds, thousands are using. But yeah, if you focus on that on day one and that's how you try and sell it, of course, unless the product is just a superior product, then yeah, chicken and egg. So really like that. Passkeys, I'm really interested on this one. Some listeners will probably know me by now that I love passkeys, but I still find, you know, I love talking about them because I think there's just so many bits to them and nuances of the experience, especially. So it's really interesting you said that actually passkeys has kind of really helped here and sped up some of the parts of the process. I'm making a guess here that actually when we're talking about identity and documents, then when we're then asking people to do a kind of an extra step of authentication, they're quite happy to do that. I'm coming from a slightly different side, which is a platform that is actually currently building a platform that is passkey only. And actually it's become a bit of a hindrance for us where users are like, what is this thing? What is this passkey? And it's because we're one of the first times they've ever seen a passkey, perhaps, or for most cases. Do you find that your users, have they seen passkeys before? Is it something to do with like, yeah, the biometric or however they do it? Is it, you know, could be via even their password vault. Do they just kind of match it up and say, yeah, well, this all makes sense? Or have there still been some UX hurdles to get over there?
Yeah, I mean, and I think this is totally hit the nail on the head. Like the user experience part here is really the hard problem. I mean, we've passed a lot of the other hurdles, the technology problems, the cryptographic keys, the hardware devices of storing them. This is sort of the really difficult one. And there are a couple of things that we've done that actually make passkeys a little bit easier for our users to adopt. So one of the cool things, you know, part of the onboarding process in Footprint sometimes includes like document verification. And when you're scanning a document and then doing a selfie scan, I mean, users are fairly familiar with this process just because tons of platforms like a Coinbase requires it regularly, right? And one thing that we do, you know, when you onboard on, let's say, on desktop or web, we show a QR code to that user and they scan it with their phone, the camera on their phone, and that actually opens up a native experience on their device. So we're leveraging this new technology called Instant Apps on Android and App Clips on iOS. And so you might have seen this if you went to a restaurant and you got like a QR code on a bill and you scan that QR code and it brought up like this native Toast app or this native, you know, app to pay. We're actually using that exact same tech. And so when you scan that QR code, we're loading an app just in time. This is a really small application that is really gives us, the business, and the user a bunch of different advantages. First of all, it's much more native user experience, much more trusted. The user feels that they're doing something that is okay versus, you know, pulling up a sketchy. We've all done those, like, you know, I checked into a hotel recently and they made me like go to this random URL and upload a picture of my driver's license, right? So this feels like a really native experience. It's branded to the product that they're onboarding to. So they'll see Coinbase or they'll see, you know, Flexcar there. And so the idea is we do the document scanning, we do the selfie scanning. And by the way, it's much more accurate because we can use like rectangular detection, you know, use all the native ML kind of capabilities on the device to have much better scanning than you would get through a webcam. We do this face detection, selfie detection. We can scan the barcodes and the different attributes, vault it directly, right? All of that good stuff. But the other benefit is that we can tap into the native passkey biometric APIs. So we can, you know, as part of the liveness check, right, the user does not necessarily even know that they're registering a passkey. From their perspective, it seems like they're setting up Face ID for this product, you know. And so it actually feels a lot more native because you're in a native app, there's a lot fewer screens, you know, to go through, and you're already giving some information. So maybe like emotionally, it's easier to also do a Face ID or because that's actually much faster than scanning a document and whatever else. So we couple that piece with the identity verification piece for documents. And it works standalone too. Even if you're not scanning a document, you could just scan that QR code to use your phone to set up that passkey. So one of the things that we do is when we onboard a passkey, we always do it with a phone. And our sort of reason for that is that maximizes the chance that the user will go through that flow successfully, but also that that passkey will then be synced across all their devices, right? Who knows where they're onboarding on, you know, desktop or web. And even if, you know, it's like sometimes if you're renting an apartment, let's say you rent an apartment in person, you use like the realtor's laptop or whatever, right? At least you're using your own phone, right? So we try to make sure you use your own device every single time to do these kind of really sensitive things like setting a passkey, scanning a document. And so that's just part of the regular flow. And we've seen pretty good success with that. You know, I think different platforms, when they introduce passkeys, they try to explain a passkey to a user. And I'm not sure exactly, you know, there's, I think different users maybe react differently to those kinds of things.
I just want to call out to the listeners, I think that's one of the most interesting and fantastic ways to use passkeys, the way that's just been explained there. I was going to ask anyway, yeah, you know, how have maybe mobile devices or has that come into it? But this is it. I think that passkeys on desktop currently are the big fall down for all the reasons you've just mentioned. You know, you could be on someone else's laptop, much more likely than a phone, for example, but also just the general experience across OSs, across browsers, very disjointed right now. I really love the way that you've explained how you have approached it. So yeah, that's fantastic. So just kind of starting to wrap up a bit. I mean, this, we're recording this probably around a month before listeners will be hearing it, but you mentioned one kind of product development towards the start of this episode, but what else can you share, you know, across say the next 6 to 12 months? Like what can people potentially expect from Footprint?
Yeah. First of all, thank you. Appreciate the kind words there. And yeah, we're pretty excited about it. Yeah, there's two kind of real updates coming pretty soon, probably sooner, probably the next 6 months or so. In addition to this compliance product, we've been working really hard to integrate a bunch of new fraud tools. And so one of the really cool things about using Footprint on the front end is that because we can do a bunch of behavioral analysis of the user, we can actually bake that into our rules engine. And so bake that into different step-ups. So what you'll see with Footprint is that we're now starting to integrate and provide a lot of risk signals around fraudulent behavior. Think of like, user is typing their SSN very hesitantly, or like they're typing in two digits and then they're pausing and then typing in more, right? To suggest that maybe they're copying it from somewhere. You know, usually people know those by heart. So taking into account a bunch of different variables and user behaviors and how they interact with the different inputs, maybe they're, you know, fingerprinting their mobile web-based session, all sort of the front end bells and whistles you can imagine that can tie into the KYC, the onboarding experience, and exposing those as fraud risk signals. We're also integrating third-party tools. You know, I think it's unlike KYC, which is commoditized and largely can be solved for any kind of business with a simple set of rules. I think fraud is much more complicated because different businesses experience really different types of frauds. Payments fraud, like crypto, for instance, experiences horribly different fraud. And so the idea of being able to, without having to, you know, a new fraud attack pops up, put three engineers on it, spend a month building the integration. By that time, a new fraud attack hits your company. The idea with Footprint is because we own that onboarding flow for you, you can just turn on different tools and make it really easy to deploy anti-fraud techniques without writing a single line of code and respond to it in real time. We can even tell you that these things are happening before you even realize they're happening. And this is something that we've seen be really effective to a lot of customers that we're talking to and our existing customers. So that's one. And kind of related to that, you know, we've talked about this in kind of, I've spoken maybe for granted a little bit about like how companies just use our onboarding experience. And that actually, you know, if you're head of product at a company that onboarding is part of your domain, you're probably a little bit hesitant when you hear that. You say, okay, we spent, you know, 3 months building a perfect onboarding flow that like explains the product and then bounces into, you know, collecting some information and something very intricate. How can we just replace all of that with like an embedded, you know, credit card form like Stripe would do, but for identity? And, you know, we've built from the ground up a very customizable onboarding form that makes it so that it looks and matches your, you know, the look and feel of your product. But we've even hit kind of the upper bound limits of that as well. And so one of the things that we're rolling out really soon is we've taken everything that we've done in our embedded onboarding experience and we're breaking that out into components. So effectively, if you want to adopt Footprint, instead of having to rebuild your onboarding flow or, you know, delete the thing that you've already built and replace it with Footprint, what you can really do is go to all your different PII inputs and just replace them with the Footprint components, and we'll magically take care of the rest. And so that includes all the sort of validation errors, like, you know, the PO box example I gave, or like the, you know, fat fingering, the date of birth, all the way to all the fraud behavioral capturing that we do, because those are, you're now using our inputs. and all the one-click abilities. So, you know, if we detect that we already know who that user is, we can just pop a modal up and say, hey, authenticate with your passkey, and then autofill the rest of those form fields, have the user confirm that information, and skip past the next step. So we've effectively taken our embedded onboarding experience and broken it out into components. We're calling it onboarding components. And kind of like what you would imagine, you know, an SDK, right? So instead of, if you're a new company and you're building your onboarding flow, you can still build it. Just use the components from Footprint. You can customize them however you'd like, but you get these sort of superpowers right from day one. So those are the two things that we're excited the most about probably the next few months. And yeah, a lot more coming later, but I don't know if I can share that just yet.
Yeah, I like where I think I hear that's going. Almost sort of kind of SSO, but in a nice way, where the user hasn't quite realized that it's the experience that's driven it, and it's not sort of a maybe quite so much a brand, but they realize this experience of onboarding. They're used to it. And then yeah, the kind of the magic bit there, you know, oh, I just use my passkey and boom, all these details. Obviously, so long as they kind of know why they came up and where they've come from. But yeah, I use my passkey. It's, oh, wow, they already know about me and in a good way. Fantastic. I can just move through this process very fast. Yeah, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, our goal isn't to teach the user about Footprint when they're filling out that onboarding flow for the first time, but rather to teach about it so they understand why it's being autofilled the next time or the third time or the fourth time. That's really where I think people will start seeing Footprint directly. But right now, we're focused on building that initial onboarding experience and making that the best.
Yeah, the example of that, I guess I've seen more closely, but it's kind of on the, yeah, kind of on the end of an experience is the Shop Pay model where, yeah, users weren't really aware they were using Shopify across all these different sites, but they were aware that this payment method, which was just, I believe, the first iteration was just put in your phone number and we've got the rest, basically. And that kind of, yeah, people started to then clock, oh, this means it's Shopify. But the experience was so great, they didn't really care to begin with. And then now Shop Pay has been rolled out outside of Shopify, which is super interesting. But yeah, kind of sounds like a same approach, very different place to position it for the user. But yeah.
Yeah, Shop Pay is incredible. I mean, I think they're also rolling out passkeys as well now, I believe. So that, yeah, I think it's a very similar model. I think they're probably innovate, like maybe them and Stripe Link, I think is trying to do something similar as well with the payments provider. But yeah, we definitely have a lot of respect for those giants. They're doing awesome work.
Yeah, yeah, likewise. Alex, it has been great to have you on. There's been just so many interesting things here, and I'm sure a lot of inspiration for developers out there as well, especially around sort of the vaulting side, as well as, you know, all this stuff towards the end about passkeys and how to implement them in a nice way. So yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciated the time.
Thanks, Ferrer. This has been super fun. Really glad to do it. Thank you.